on, Wendy. Say it. Say it.
It's music to my ears.
Sure it is. Because it's music and you've got ears. So it is music to your ears.
And it's a Friday, Bob.
Friday, everybody.
Forget?
Welcome to Friday. Very nice day outside.
Isn't it gorgeous? We've been blessed with great weather.
The water is sparkling, Wendy. I'm looking at Lake Michigan and it is sparkling.
It's like
They've
liquid
added
diamonds.
Sparkling water to the water supply in Lake Michigan. You're in peril. What's wrong?
I need help from the experts. So we'll go to the listeners because I don't know if you or Bertrand will know this. Mary might be able to help me.
What kind of help do you need?
I'm sure we can help.
I have
Steve's
an issue
confident.
With my car.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to talk about cars today.
What happened?
Oh, I got smoked in the garage. Well, I smoked myself, actually, so I don't want to talk about it. I'll help you, though.
Well, this is what seems like a minor issue, but it could become a bigger issue later today. You know when you put your seatbelt on, there is the hook, and there's a little opening in the hook that the seatbelt slides through? Sometimes it gets twisted.
Yes.
I cannot untwist it, and I keep pulling it, so now if I pull it anymore, the seatbelt's not going to fit me. So I can't wear my seatbelt.
I'm confused on how that would have happened. Does it happen all the time?
It happens every once in a while, and usually you just kind of manipulate it and slide it through the hole.
And it comes loose. But not this time.
I can't. It won't budge.
Uh-huh.
And I keep pulling on it and pulling on it. And
this
it
is on your side, on the driver's
side.
Yeah.
So obviously that little clip will not move. And I think I may have pulled it too tight. So I cannot wear the seatbelt. That seems to be a problem.
You mean you can't wear it snugly or you can't put it on?
I can't put it on.
I've made the bottom part too small.
For how long haven't you been wearing it?
No, I had it on this morning, but then when I was at a stoplight, I was pulling at it and trying to
doesn't
fix
your car
it.
Wonder what
beep?
The people in the next car thought.
Yeah, I've always found you shouldn't pull at it at a stoplight. That's the
Don't
trouble.
Pick at it or pull at it, Wendy.
It was still actually connected, Mary, so it wasn't beeping.
Oh, that would drive me nuts.
But I was just trying to... It's just stuck in the clip. There's like, you know, a little opening, and then if the seatbelt gets twisted, there's... I mean, I'm not taking it into a place to have somebody fix it. Somebody has to know some kind of secret.
Do you have any Crisco?
That's going to make the seatbelt all greasy.
Yeah, but it might loosen it up a little bit.
I cannot undo it. 312-981-7200. I need assistance.
I don't know a lot about cars, but it sounds like it's your differential.
You know what, Bill? I think you might be right.
Yeah, I
Well,
have
hasn't
that.
This ever happened to you where the seatbelt gets twisted?
I don't know what you're talking about.
It seems like it should happen only in older cars that have the, you know, the seatbelt that, I don't know, that with the longer strap and all that.
I don't know how this happened.
Like on an airplane.
It's very easy to blame Jim, although he hasn't been driving that car
lately. Run with that. Run with that for a little bit.
It's Father's Day.
Did he try to fix it?
No, I just noticed it when I got in the car this morning, and I had to like go really tight to get the seatbelt on the bottom part. There's a lot of extra slack on the top.
Yeah. Well, I don't understand why. Even I certainly believe you, but why did it get tighter and more twisted? I don't understand why that
because
happened.
Because I was pulling on it, and hardly will move.
It read it as like somebody's using the seatbelt. So
no, it was
down.
On me.
So you were
it was on you.
Were you like constricting your legs?
Yes.
By pulling.
Yeah.
Tight.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean,
you could have been smothered. It was like a boa, like a human boa.
Did you lose feeling?
No, but Bill, I don't think you understand what's happening.
I don't know how. I've never had it twist up. Mine are always it just fits in and then it unfits.
The strap got twisted right where the buckle is, and there's a little opening where the strap like slides through, so you can just pull it and connect it.
Yeah,
it's just stuck right where that clip is.
You got to get a new car.
From the text, WD-40.
Is it twisted there? Is it twisted or just stuck?
It's twisted and stuck.
It's
I can't like straighten it out to let it glide through easily.
Right.
This has happened in the past, and usually you just kind of mess with
it
for a little bit.
And it undoes.
Exactly. When in doubt, you jiggle it or you hit the TV.
Right. You can't really take it out of its, you know.
I know, and I'm not going to cut it because I don't have a seatbelt, and I don't want to go to a mechanic that, you know,
it'll be $600.
I know. Everything's $600 or above.
Right.
It's just the strap of the seatbelt twisted, and it's stuck in the clip, and I need help. I don't know what to do. I mean, usually you can just kind of work it through.
Yes, but not this time. Why is this time different from all other times?
I don't know.
Nothing
it's just really
different.
Wedged in there. It's like a straight ribbon.
Right.
And then, you know, it kind of bunched up when someone probably me, was pulling it down to connect it. And it's just kind of bunched up in the clip, so there's no free sliding.
Is your car reacting as though you're not using your seatbelt?
No, because it's connected.
It is connected.
What if you had a little screwdriver and you were pushed at the belt to try to even it out?
A very small one.
Yeah, like
the I see what you're
saying. Like you would need
an eyeglass,
a microscope to see it. It'd be so small.
I knew you guys.
Once
would
you used to tighten your glasses,
That's the best idea so far.
Steve's got, that is a pretty good idea.
This has never happened to any of you where your seatbelt strap gets twisted. Honest to God, this has happened to me probably 5 times in my life.
What kind of car?
In various cars.
You got to keep your hands off your belt when you're driving. Just leave it alone.
It's
try to stay away from it.
You know, when you're releasing it, when you get to your destination and you unclip it, and it, you know, flies back.
And then it self twists?
Somehow it twisted.
You need a seatbelt class because you must be doing it differently than any of us.
Yeah.
I can't believe I'm the only one.
I don't know how that can happen.
Well, no one's helping me.
And I've been in seatbelt simulator since I was 11 years old. That's what I do. That's my job. This is a sidebar. I do that for a living, sidebar. But
maybe I should get those crash test dummies
see
to
what
help
they
me.
Can help
somebody
you out
said
with.
You should YouTube twisted seatbelts, and there's tons of tutorials on how to fix
on
it.
On how to do it?
Yeah.
That's disappointing.
Melissa.
Boy, people have a lot of time.
Has
on their
this
hands.
Ever happened to you, or am I a one in a million? Well, you don't.
Oh, my gosh. You're not one in a million. I love you guys. I just have to put that out there.
Oh, thank
there.
You.
But.
Absolutely. So this may be a long shot, but in my car, I can't do anything with my seatbelt while the car is on. The car is a safety issue, won't let me do that. Have you tried messing with it with the car off?
Oh, yeah. I sat in my driveway for about 15 minutes this morning trying to, like, pull it through and make it, I made it tighter instead of looser. It's just stuck right at that clip.
I know exactly what you mean. I'm so sorry.
There really are all kinds of videos on YouTube about how to untwist it.
Oh, somebody says the clip lifts up. I looked for that because in another car it did. All right. Well, Melissa, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too, Wendy.
Thanks,
thank
Melissa.
You.
Wendy, I just Googled Twisted Sister and it doesn't help at all.
You're not helping me.
Originally, they're from New Jersey. I didn't know that, though.
Carol, you have a suggestion? Hi, Carol. Oh, Carol hung up. Evidently,
wouldn't
her suggestion
you?
Was not good.
All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break and then help Wendy out. Her seatbelt's all twisted. What's a girl to do? 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. What would you think if it's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Wendy's in trouble. Her seatbelt's all gnarled up.
It is. It's just twisted and stuck in the clip. And
No one should have to live through this. No one.
Somebody, I hate when your seatbelt gets twisted where it's not like an even, it's not laying on you even.
Right.
And sometimes you have to go and try and twist it back, but this is stuck. And I just can't move it either way. And a lot of people said I've had this happen many times before. Somebody, my daughter squirmed so much in her car seat, she was pinned.
Oh.
I tried releasing the pressure and couldn't. I was so scared because she kept moving. It became tighter. I took scissors and cut the belt. I don't think
that's
the right answer.
Right. That's not the right answer at all. Could it be, I'm not blaming any particular car company, but I don't know that I've ever had a car who's had anything like that. There's little to no give in my belt once I stop using it. It's just straight all the time. It doesn't twist up. Is it possible it's the manufacturer of the car?
I don't know. People are saying, oh, it happened to my Toyota, but not my Jeep. We have Toyotas.
Oh.
I don't know.
Maybe.
Someone said take it to the dealer and have them fix it because it's a safety issue.
How old is the car?
3 years old. Well, I mean, it's not, it just needs to be fixed, and I don't know how to go about doing it.
Is it one of those things, though, where they go, the warranty's expired, man. There's nothing we can do at
this
point.
It's not a warranty.
No?
It's just the
car.
Just twisted.
Right.
It's an easy fix for someone, just not for me.
Just not for you. I would sell the car today. I'd give it to somebody. Cars for kids. Give it to Cars for Kids.
No.
Come on.
Maybe I should try a dull pair of tweezers. I use that method when cloth gets stuck in a zipper. I now keep a knife in my car. I don't think that's legal. Because in the 80s, I literally was stuck in my seatbelt that would not unclick. And I had to be cut out of it.
Wow. Wendy, I hope it doesn't come to that.
Oh, needle nose pliers, someone said. All right, I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
Needle nose pliers and a small screwdriver, which actually Bertrand recommended.
That is Dave Plyer's son's name. I will call him Toot Sweet.
And then the final word of advice, did you check your flux capacitor? Which I didn't.
And you need to.
Yes, I do.
And you need to.
We have something to give away, do we not?
Oh, this is so exciting. For many, this is exciting, Wendy. I know that you have issues.
I don't have issues.
Julie Andrews.
You have created me having issues with Julie Andrews, and I think she's fine. She's a fantastic actress.
Right.
It just so happens that I never saw Sound of Music, and really everything you've mentioned, Mary Poppins, other things, I never saw either.
Right.
The only thing I remember seeing was Victor Victoria.
Perhaps her worst film.
So you've turned that into me hating her, and I don't hate her.
The part that's confusing to me is that you love musicals.
Right.
And yet every musical or non-musical that Julie Andrews has done, with the exception of Victor Victoria, you've somehow avoided.
So if it's not a hate, would you just say it's a very strong dislike, or how much do you not like her?
I just said I have never seen it, that's all. And I'm going to watch Sound of Music this summer. Will that shut you up?
You've been saying that since we met almost 25 years ago.
I've been busy.
I'm going to sit down. I'm going to watch
Sound of
Music.
Stuck in my seatbelt.
Watch it with Jim for Father's Day.
Do that.
The boys have seen it. They're shocked.
Everyone's seen Sound of Music.
I bet Jim has seen it too.
Babies are shown Sound of Music upon their arrival. You have to go out of your way to have not seen anything Julie Andrews. And why, if you've only seen one Julie Andrews project, was it Victor Victoria? What happened there?
I don't know. My grandma must have taken me. I don't know.
That's so strange.
So please don't say I don't like Julie Andrews.
I wouldn't say that you don't like her. It's just curious that of all the things she's done, and she's done some pretty good things over the years, you haven't seen any of it. You've seen clips of it, right?
Yeah.
You know,
on
like
the awards shows.
What's Sound of Music about? You must know that. You don't know what that's about?
It's about a family.
Yes. That's it, exactly. Tell us something about the family. Who are they? Do you know who they are?
The Von Trapps.
Yes. Yeah, the Von Trapps, yes. And what do the Von Trapps do?
I really don't know.
You don't know. You should see it. You would like it.
I'm going to watch it.
I'll watch
it this summer.
Movies about families who sing and run through the mountains, frolic through the mountains.
I like When the Hills Are Alive.
Well, this is your movie.
All right.
Mary Poppins, you've never seen.
Mm-mm.
SOB, you've never seen. Thoroughly Modern Millie, you've never seen. I'm trying to think. The Shrek movies?
Yes, she's in that.
She's in, I think, the second and the third Shrek movie. She's the queen. So there's that. Would you have not seen it if you knew Julie Andrews?
No,
was it?
No? You've turned all right. this all around just because I haven't seen The Sound of Music.
It's very strange.
I blame my mom. She should have showed me when
Why
I was
did
little.
Did your mom hate Julie Andrews?
She didn't. I'm sure she loved
Julie
The Sound
Andrews
of Music.
Ever do to your mom?
I don't know.
It's very strange.
Anyway, we have something to give away. I do not hate her. We have a pair of tickets to an evening of conversation with Julie Andrews. Wouldn't it be funny if I was the moderator?
Well, do you remember when Jasmine came in about a month ago and said there's a chance we'll have Julie Andrews on the show, and everybody got really quiet?
I've interviewed her. She is the nicest woman.
I'm sure she is. I would love to speak to
her.
She's legendary.
She sent me, which I truly believe were hand-signed Christmas cards.
From Julie Andrews?
For many years, yes.
That is amazing.
That's the kind of woman Julie Andrews is.
I mean, I'm sure she sends out thousands, but it did seem like it was really signed.
Well, we have a pair of tickets to an evening of conversation with Julie Andrews. It's at the Chicago Theater on December 10th.
Are you going
to
moderate this?
No.
It says here, Julie, you've been in 38 films. Name one. Other than Victor Victoria, name one.
A true legend in every sense of the word. Julie Andrews has entertained millions for more than half
millions,
a
century. And then in parentheses, except Wendy Snyder.
No, that is not true. She will share stories, take questions from the audience as well.
I have a question for Julie Andrews.
What?
What did you and Wendy Snyder, what happened between the two of you? Why can't you guys just patch this up once and for all?
Oh, we've just lost the tickets. Thank you, Bill.
You're welcome.
Tickets are on sale now at the Chicago Theater box office or at all Ticketmaster outlets. I'll tell you right now, I promise you, and I've said it on the radio, so it has to be true.
Yes.
I will watch The Sound of Music before she comes to the Chicago Theater on December 10th.
She's going
to
be here in December. By then, you will have seen.
Yep.
Are you going to watch like 30 seconds a day?
No, I'm going to watch the whole thing. No, I have a busy summer.
Right. This pledge has just slipped because 2 minutes ago she was going to watch it this summer.
Right.
Now it's going to be by December.
It's probably going to be this summer, but I got to give myself a little cushion.
Right. You got the seatbelt thing. You can't just be rushing into a movie. It's a long movie. All right. Here's what we'll do. We'll take a break.
Don't ruin this.
We'll get some news. I may pick her up at the airport when she flies in.
Good.
I may pick her up.
She'll write you a handwritten thank you
note.
That's
what she does. That's the way Julie is.
Don't mess her seatbelt up.
I'm not gonna. I won't. We'll take a break. We'll do some news. And then your chance at those tickets to see the one. I can't say enough. It's Julie Andrews. You know who she is. Stick around. It's Spillin' One to WGN.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens, brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Cream-colored ponies.
Wendy, come back. Come back.
Quiet, I'm listening.
Where are you going?
Is this from The Sound of Music?
Yes, it is.
Said only one person in the world.
No, there are a lot of people texting a woman in her 70s who never saw it either. Someone can't remember if they saw it.
Oh,
I haven't seen it, Wendy.
You really?
Jazz.
No. Oh. But I've seen Mary Poppins. I just hadn't seen this.
Yeah, everyone's seen Mary Poppins.
I haven't.
The world had a night. We had Mary Poppins night. We all sat and watched it together. Where were you?
I never saw Cinderella. I had a bad childhood.
I think you might have, Wendy. I do.
We have a pair of tickets to give away. It's an evening of conversation with Julie Andrews. She's mega talented. She's super nice.
Or so you've heard.
Stop. You know, they're going to take these tickets away. Somebody suggested I should win them and you have to go
to this.
That would
make perfect sense.
No. Chicago Theater, December
10th. Just
sit in a box. She would come back like the biggest Julie Anderson. And then, you know what, Bill?
You can't believe all this woman has accomplished in one lifetime.
I know how much she has accomplished. I never said I didn't like her. All I said was I never saw The Sound of Music. And you twisted it and turned it down
like
many paths.
Like a seatbelt. Like your seatbelt.
Tickets are on sale now at the Chicago Theater box office or all Ticketmaster outlets. Or Bill's going to tell you how you can win a pair right now. Can I throw the phone number out there?
Yes, please.
312-981-7200, I think.
Right. 312-981-7200. I have devised a very special question, a very special Julie Andrews question. Here's how it will work. We will stack up the phone lines one by one by one by one. I will just ask you this Julie Andrews question. The first person who gets it right in its entirety gets those tickets to see Julie Andrews.
All right.
Is that fair?
So, yeah, just load them up with their names, Jasmine, and you will go through.
I will ask this question. It's not now.
What if I know the answer?
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
You're thinking I don't.
I don't think you know the answer to this, but it's you've surprised me in the past with things that I didn't think you would get, and you have nailed them. So I don't know. You might get this, Wendy. You got to call in. You have to call in to win.
All right.
312-981-7200. Let us talk to the folks.
All right. Judy is our first contestant. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Judy, what's your favorite Julie Andrews performance? That's not the question, by the way. That's not the question. I'm just curious.
The Sound of Music.
Oh, so wasn't that great?
Yeah, that is good.
She's lying to you. All right. Here's the question, Judy. I wish you good luck. I hope you win. Here goes.
Thank you.
What does Julie Andrews have in common with Barbara Streisand and Lupita Nyong'o?
Whoa.
Who's going to know the answer to this?
A true Julie Andrews fan.
Gosh. Actresses, that's all I can come up with.
They are all actresses, but like I said, it has to be answered in its entirety, so we cannot give you the point. Thank you for playing, though. I appreciate it, Judy.
Okay.
Take care.
Thank you, Judy. You ready for the next contestant?
Yes.
Turn left
under
Natoma Avenue.
Oh.
Turn left, Sandy. Ah, Sandy hung up.
She was embarrassed.
There's no need to be embarrassed.
Don't be embarrassed.
Look at us.
We all have Jim, right?
All right. Right. Jim is calling from Beecher. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how you doing?
Jim, it's the same question. We're doing fine. It's the same question. If you get it right, you're going to see Julie Andrews. What does Julie Andrews have in common with Barbara Streisand and Lupita Nyong'o?
They both played like the same role on Broadway as they did in the movies, right?
Unfortunately, that is not the correct answer.
Starring leading role in the Hobbit is Close.
No, you sold it well.
Jim, this is the audio essay question that you've just done. Mm. You're just kind of making it up and lengthening it, but it's not right.
You sold it so well, though.
Yeah, but I've also got I've got a really bad cold, so it's
oh, he does?
I can't hear, guys.
Mm. All right, well, feel better. No. Not right.
No.
Right? He was,
no. Okay. He was incorrect. He was
all
incorrect.
Right. Maureen is on the line.
Maureen, the best of luck to you with the same question. What does Julie Andrews have in common with Barbara Streisand and Lupita Nyong'o?
Maureen?
They all sing beautifully.
That's true, but was it the answer?
It is not the correct answer. Oh. There's a very specific answer. I wish we could give it to you, but unfortunately we cannot. Thank you, though, Maureen.
All right, Barbara's on the line. She's calling from Bridgeview. Barbara, do you feel lucky,
yes,
punk?
Hi, my two loves. They were all married to the same guy.
Oh. No, they were not all married to the same guy.
I love your guess,
though.
That's
an interesting guess, but no.
Have a good day. Love
all right,
you
thank you.
Thank you so much.
I had to think about that, and neither Barbara Streisand nor Lupita Nyong'o was ever married to Blake Edwards. Hello.
Nancy.
Hello, Nancy.
Nancy, it's the same exact question. No one seems to know the answer to this. Maybe you will. What does Julie Andrews have in common with both Barbara Streisand and Lupita Nyong'o?
Academy Award winners.
I would need a little bit more information.
What do you need?
The rest of the answer. The rest of the correct answer. You're on the right track, but I need a little bit.
They won the Oscars.
Well, the Oscars and the Academy Awards are the same, but there's still a missing element.
Right. That's right. You're right on that. Okay, the same element. Well, what do you want to know?
I can't
tell. Specifically?
Yes. I need more than just they won Oscars. You have to provide a little bit more information about that.
Yeah, they were the top of the game. All three, the top of the game. What else do you want to know?
Category, maybe?
Wow. This is like
a category?
It is not.
Number one, they're the top of the game. So what else do you need to know to win the ticket?
Nancy, I love your forcefulness.
What do you want to know?
He has a specific
yes, there's
answer.
A specific answer that's more than just what you gave. So you have to.
Come on. You guys are full of it. You're full of it.
That's not the right answer.
I can't hang up. I want to keep talking to Nancy.
You go on and on about nothing. Julie Andrews is tops. She's tops.
Why do you listen to us if we go on and on about nothing?
Because there's nobody else.
All right. You know what? World. I'll take that.
No, right. It's not enough.
I'm sorry, Nancy.
Wow.
Please use that for a promo.
Wow.
That is a promo. Do not put in, I'll say the world. That cannot be included. Nancy and I would get along, wouldn't we?
I think you guys would be very good friends.
Best friends. All right, Laura's from Tinley Park. Laura, come on.
Laura, here's the question one more time. Good luck. What does Julie Andrews have in common with Barbara Streisand and Lupita Nyong'o?
Oh, God. I was the same answer I had, that they were Oscar winners. They all have perfect pitch, maybe? I don't know.
I will give in to the part that it has something to do with the Academy Awards. No doubt about that, but I need something a little more specific. Any guess?
They're all women.
They are all women. I will agree
nice
to
try,
that,
Laura.
But it's still not quite right.
All right, let's go to Mike. This is getting heated up. God, I love Nancy. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
Mike, same question. No one knows it yet, but keep in mind, as a little side clue, we've established that it could be Academy Award related. It is Academy Award related. What does Julie Andrews
they
have in common?
Won for best song for Academy Award.
No, that's not it. That is not it.
Sorry, Mike. We have a pair of tickets for an evening with Julie Andrews and Nancy. Because she just kills me.
Added bonus. Let's do this. We'll take one more guess, Wendy, and then we'll go to break, and then I will add another clue to this to make it a little bit easier.
Rick, do you feel lucky today?
I hope I kind of do.
Let's see how you do, Rick. What does Julie Andrews have in common with Barbara Streisand and Lupita Nyong'o? And as we've established, it has something to do with the Academy Awards. What could it be?
So they are Academy Award winners, but they won it in their film debuts.
That is 100% correct.
That's it?
That's it. Julie Andrews, Barbara Streisand, and Lupita Nyong'o all won Academy Awards in their very first movie. Lupita Nyong'o did it for 12 Years a Slave.
12 Years a Slave.
Barbara Streisand did it for...
A Star is Born?
No, Funny Girl.
Funny Girl, which I did see.
You saw Funny Girl. And then, of course, Julie Andrews won it for...
The Sound of
Mary
Music.
Poppins. Mary Poppins,
oh,
Wendy.
Yeah, yep. I'm bad.
Yep.
You know what, Rick? You deserve these. You worked hard. Top of the heap there.
top of the game. Yes.
They're good. What more do you want? Hang on, Rick. We will set you up. We've got a pair of tickets to An Evening of Conversation with Julie Andrews. It's all happening at the Chicago Theater on December 10th. She is legendary. She's nice. And she is going to be at the Chicago Theater. If you didn't win tickets from us, tickets are on sale now, currently at the Chicago Theater box office or all Ticketmaster outlets.
My favorite text, do you guys really have tickets to see Julie Andrews? Because nothing makes a contest better if after figuring out who the winner is saying, I lied, I don't really have the prize. That would have been great.
You go on and on about nothing.
I can't disagree with her about that part. She nailed that part. Just didn't get the rest of the answer right.
We'll take a break. I think you have something to tell us.
Wendy, I do. Now that warmer weather is here, maybe it's time to switch your sheets and duvets to something just a little bit breezier and soft.
Oh, Gomez.
Tadita. Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Wendy, a couple of texts from people who missed the answer to our question about Julie Andrews, the great Julie Andrews. The question was, what does Julie Andrews have in common with both Barbara Streisand and Lupita Nyong'o? The correct answer is that all three won Academy Awards for their very first film role. Lupita Nyong'o won in 2013 for 12 Years a Slave. Barbara Streisand won in 1968 for Funny Girl. Julie Andrews won in 1965 for Mary Poppins. Now listen to this. There were other actresses that also did the same thing. Very few guys have done this. About a dozen women have done it, but only two men in the history of Hollywood
really?
Have won Academy Awards for their very first film role. Harold Russell won back in 1946 for Best Years of Our Lives. That year he was also given, they didn't think he would win the Academy Award because it was his first movie, nobody had heard of him, and he was up against stiff competition, so the Academy decided they were going to give him a special award anyway, but then he ended up winning Supporting Actor, good for him. He's amazing in that movie. And I don't know if you remember this man, Dr. Heng S. Nyor, who won for The Killing Fields back in 1984.
I do remember that.
Yeah. Here are the women who have won. First movie role ever, Tatum O'Neill.
Paper Moon.
Paper Moon in 1973. Boy, was she good in that.
She was fantastic.
So good in that.
How come she kind of stopped acting?
She did Little Darlings.
That was great, too.
She did Nickelodeon.
But still, I mean, I would have expected her to still be acting today.
Yeah.
She was really good.
She was so good in Paper Moon. That's one of the funniest movies of all time. Such a great movie. Ryan O'Neill, Madeline Kahn, just perfect. Jennifer Hudson did it in 2007. Do you know which movie that would have been?
I can't remember.
Dreamgirls?
Yep. Chicago's Own.
Chicago's Own Jennifer Hudson. And if you'll remember, the handicappers who always pick who will win and who will not win had her either fourth or fifth. Nobody thought she would win.
Uh-huh.
She was up against really tough competition that year. I mentioned Harold Russell. I mentioned Dr. Heng S. Nyor. Marlee Matlin, another Chicagoan, in 1986 for Children of a Lesser God.
Yeah.
She was really good in that with William Hurt. Also among the winners, Eva Marie Saint for On the Waterfront. I always forget that was her. Did you ever see On the Waterfront?
Absolutely.
I always forget that was her first movie because she went on to make 70 or 80 movies after that, and she's always so good. She's still around. She's a wonderful woman.
Yeah, she's like 100 and some years old, isn't she?
She's in her either 80s or 90s.
I thought she was older.
But looks fantastic and has a million great stories about Hollywood. On the Waterfront was made in 1954. It was Eva Marie Saint's first movie. And the last one, I think, will shock you.
She's 94, by the way.
94, Eva Marie Saint. Are you looking at a picture of her? She looks 25 years younger than that.
Yeah.
She looks fantastic. The last one, for people who know this actress, they always forget that she was a legitimate actress before turning to TV sitcoms.
Hmm.
Does that spark some interest?
Yeah.
In 1952, the movie was Come Back, Little Sheba. The actress was Shirley Booth, who then went on to be Hazel.
Mr. Bay.
That would be her.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
That's great.
Yes. Shirley Booth won an Academy Award in her first movie for Come Back, Little Sheba back in 1952. Nothing for Mr. B. He gets nothing.
A lot of people on the text line knew that this was a debut win.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh.
And someone who lived in Arizona, so she didn't bother calling because she couldn't go to the show. And then somebody says Nancy deserves at least a MyPillow. I don't know what you want to do with
that MyPillow.
She would
smother us with it. I'm afraid if we sent her a pillow, it would end badly.
I love her. She's my favorite listener
ever. Did you want her to win? She didn't like either one of us. You know that, right? You could tell. Not that you have to.
You don't have to like us.
You don't have to like us to listen or to win a prize, but...
But you know I want to win her over now.
Oh, it wouldn't end well.
I'll win her over.
How?
Nancy, I'll get you to listen regularly and enjoy it.
Oh.
I'm going to figure out a plan.
It's quite a task. Good luck on that.
I'll turn her around.
Will you do this before or after you watch the movie The Sound of Music?
It's going to take me longer to turn Nancy around, but I will do it.
I know you will. I know you will. All right, later on in the show, a couple of things that need to be mentioned. First of all, we'll talk about television with Alexander Zalbin, as we do every Friday. A lot of stuff going on. Even though it's summer, there's a lot of big events going on TV.
Baskets debuted last night. Did you watch?
I didn't get to see the first episode.
I watched it.
Just as good as always?
Oh, my God. I forget it's Louis Anderson.
It's great.
He's just Christine to me.
Yep. At 11:35, Rick Poole has an unbelievable story to tell. Mountain climbing has certainly been in the news with what went on over in Mount Everest. He has climbed Mount Everest. He will tell you the story of what it's like to actually climb that mountain. It was a horrible, horrible season for Mount Everest. He has lived it, so he'll tell us the specifics of the adventures of climbing Mount Everest. I can't even imagine, especially after watching or seeing pictures of those climbers, those long lines to get up the mountain, down the mountain.
Bodies.
And climbing over bodies. Bodies of people who did not make the climb.
Can't you just roll them down or something? I find it shocking that there is no rescue or recovery.
All I know is that I watched a guy on MSNBC tell the story about how you sign a waiver pretty much saying, if I don't make it, I understand, and I know how dangerous it is for them to rescue a body, of somebody who didn't make it, so you can leave me up there, which is a tough thing to sign away, but it's part of the deal.
Yeah, it's you sign waivers before you go on a ride as well, and there are ways around
it. It's just too risky. You know, the elements of the mountain just don't allow for a helicopter rescue. Or your idea is to just push the body down the mountain?
Well, I don't know, because isn't there like one way up and that same way down, basically? You don't go up one side and down the other. I can't wait to find out. I'm really intrigued by all this.
He'll be with us. Rick Poole will be with us at 11:35 to tell his story.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He is sitting in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. It's all happening right here on a Friday, 720 WGN.
Thanks, Steve. It's Bill Laff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin. You know Alexander. He's here pretty much every Friday. We talk about show business. We talk about television with him. How are things, Alex? Everything good?
Doing great. How good. Are things with you?
I have to... Oh, fine. For me, Wendy, anything
everything
you want
good.
To report?
I just have to laugh because we accidentally happened into a theme song for you now. So I hope you're cool with it.
I love it.
It's very immediate.
I play it whenever I walk into stores and just everywhere.
You deserve your own theme song, Alex. Here's what I've noticed. Tell me if I'm right or wrong. It seems like there's game shows on constantly now. When did that happen?
Last year, kind of, but more so this year. It's been a little insane to see what's been happening this summer in particular. To your point, there's... I'm certainly going to forget a lot of them, but there's Pressure to Luck. Card Sharks is back. There was Let's Make a Deal, $100,000 Pyramid, so many others, and they're all launching at the same time. Mm-hmm. I think what's going on is we're seeing this weird transition period with summer television where it used to be a null zone, you know, it just repeats and that was it while everybody actually went outside. But as TV slowly transitions into going year-round, broadcast networks are kind of scrambling to come up with things that are going to fill the holes between those 22-episode seasons of regular broadcast shows. And the easiest thing to do is a game show. You know, it's much lower budget. It's much easier to produce something like that. So they're throwing tons of them on the air right now.
And people are guesting on the show, but also hosting the show that you wouldn't think, right? Mm-hmm. There's some pretty big names involved.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting, Elizabeth Banks is hosting Press Your Luck. Joel McHale is hosting Card Sharks. You have the Alec Baldwin host game show as well.
Match game.
I think it comes down to it's kind of an easier payday. You come in for a shorter work day. You're having everything fed to you. Hosting certainly has its challenges, as you guys know very well. But at the same time, it's not the same thing as being on a set all day long, all night, distributing either a dramatic or a comedic show.
It's so funny because on the old Match Game, they would hint at Dirty Answers, but it was like a subtle hint. But now on Match Game, it's as blatant can be. They want you to give Dirty Answers.
It's 2019. That's what we're all about, I guess.
One of Wendy's favorite television shows, and one of my favorite television shows, was on last night. I didn't get a chance to see it. Wendy saw it and loved it. Baskets.
The Baskets debut. You are not a clone.
Yeah, the new season of Baskets debuted on FX. You can probably stream it now on FX Plus, and it's going to be running throughout the summer. Our reviewer, Kayla Cobb, who loves the show, wrote up a wonderful review that is up on Decider. She loved it, and she's loved the episodes that she's seen. An interesting point she brought up is that the show has already been always been about arrested development for Zach Galifianakis' character, but this is a season that actually lets him make steps forward, small steps, funny steps, weird steps, but he's actually progressing as a human being, and it's delightful to see.
It is so amazing because there, I just love Louis Anderson as Christine Baskets. I don't even see him as Louis Anderson anymore. Mm-hmm. And the relationship that she has with her kids, it's like they're so dysfunctional, but they truly love each other. It's just, it's like a laugh cry kind of thing. It's the greatest show.
Yeah, it's very good. Unfortunately, not a lot of people watch FX shows, but if you do have access to FX or if you want to go back and watch the series, highly recommend checking it out.
Another trend, Alex, as long as we're talking about shows, is comedies like Baskets that also have very dark sides to them. They can be mm-hmm. very serious and very sad when they want to be, but also very funny. You've seen this show with, his name is Gad. He's a French comedian. He's Francis Jerry Seinfeld. Wendy, we had him on a couple of years ago.
Him.
He's got a show that's really, really funny at times, but very poignant and sad at other times.
Yeah, this is...
Huge in France, it's called.
Yes, Huge in France on Netflix. You know, for better or for worse, it was a trend that was started by Louis C.K.'s show, Louis, on FX, which really mixed comedy with some episodes were just completely serious. And that was a huge hit. It gave more comedians more of a chance to really mix those sort of things together. Because when it comes to awards time, comedies don't get any respect. You're laughing at it, so it seems like an easy thing. Comedians know it's not easy to put together a comedy or craft a really good joke. But if you're going for Emmys or something like that, you have to have something more dramatic. And there's so many of them on the air. It's not just FX now. It's Netflix, as you mentioned, with shows like Huge in France. HBO has shows like Barry that mix drama and comedy at the same time. And it's, other than the episode length of half an hour, sometimes it's hard to categorize them as comedies at all.
Right, right. Fred Armisen has a new project on HBO that's premiering this week. What is the project?
Sure. This is Los Espookies, and it premieres tonight on HBO at 11 p.m. And the neat kind of groundbreaking thing about the show is that it's mostly a Spanish language show. There is some English in it, but most of it is through subtitles. Usually HBO takes shows like that and puts them on their HBO Latin block. But mostly everybody is Spanish speakers. Fred Armisen guests on the show. And it's about a couple of people who use their love of horror to turn it into a very weird business in a alternate version of present-day Mexico City. Everybody on my staff who has seen it has absolutely loved the show. They think it's super weird. If you like Fred Armisen, you kind of know what you're getting into, I think. But it's very unique and very creative, and also visually creative at the same time.
Great title, Los Espookies.
I got to watch that.
Very funny.
Anything he touches,
yeah,
I have to watch.
He's so good. All right, so that starts tonight. Another superhero entree on Netflix. This is the Marvel series Jessica Jones.
Yeah, this is actually the last Marvel series that's going to be on Netflix, at least for the time being. They initially launched this whole slate that included Daredevil, Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, leading up to this Defenders team-up that was supposed to be their Avengers. Now it's kind of fizzled out. All of the shows have been canceled. They're all still going to be on the service, so if you ever want to check them out, that's fine. But as of today, the third and final season of Marvel's Jessica Jones launched, and that's going to be the last Marvel show for the time being. Unfortunately, I've watched the first couple of episodes. It's a bit of a slog. Kristen Ritter, who plays the main character, is very good in it. Carrie Ann Moss, who plays a lawyer, friend slash enemy of hers, is also really excellent, as of the rest of the cast. If you're a fan of the show, certainly you're going to want to check it out. But a lot of the flaws that were in the worst seasons of the Marvel Netflix shows, which is too long episodes, very slow pacing, making fun of superhero tropes, they're all kind of there. And it's not bad, but it's definitely a fizzle out for the franchise, I would say.
Is the shine off the diamond on superhero shows? We've had such a glut of them in the last 5 years or so. Are we starting to say, oh, we've seen it all before or not?
I think it's changed, if anything. We're starting to see a second generation of superhero shows that are doing really well. Things like Umbrella Academy, which is from a Dark Horse property, Dark Horse Comics instead of Marvel Comics property, did really well on Netflix. You have other things like Doom Patrol on DC Universe, things that point at the flaws in superhero fiction and almost work as anti-superhero fiction are the things that are working quite well. But then if you turn to superhero shows, if you look at a network like the CW, shows like The Flash and Arrow are still absolutely their top shows, and millions of people watch them every week. So some shows are falling down. The Marvel Netflix shows certainly did not work, but Marvel is going to be launching new shows on Hulu in the coming year. Disney Plus has tons of shows coming up that tie very specifically into the Marvel movies, so they're not going away anytime soon.
I'm not a huge superhero movie lover or show lover, but and that's why I didn't originally watch The Umbrella Academy, because that's completely different, and that I absolutely loved.
I think we're going to see a lot more like that. There's a creator named Mark Millar who has launched a deal with Netflix, and he has his own, not superhero universe, but group of superhero books. He's the creator of, I don't know if I can say this on air, but Kick Ass, the movie series that came out.
Gotta go, Alexander. Thanks for calling.
You can say it.
No, you're fine.
Yeah.
Just don't say F you. No, you can't spell it.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
You can say kick ass.
All the kids from the script spelling bee know you just swore.
Oh, geez.
Oh, no, it's all right.
All the fives from the SEC are going to be through the roof on this one.
They're worth it.
But my point being that you're going to see a lot more superhero shows like that coming on Netflix that are deconstructing superhero shows in a certain way.
That makes sense. All right, let's do this. We'll take a quick break. We'll talk with our bosses about what Alexander just said. We'll apologize. We'll come back with more. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin. Potty mouthed Alexander, as we call him here, WGN. Who knows what he'll say next? Text has come in, Alex. I need to know when Frankie and Grace is coming back. It is coming back, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. People really love the show. I think it just finished its fourth season, right? Or fifth season?
Fourth or fifth.
Yeah, the series was renewed for a sixth season, and typically they premiered at the beginning of the year around January or so. So if you were looking for the sixth season, I would guess probably January 2020, though there's nothing confirmed by Netflix as of yet.
Wendy, you had a question about a show you're watching?
I have been watching Netflix a lot lately. I've been catching up on things, and I keep seeing the promo for Murder Mystery, this new movie with Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston. And I just assumed that it was a big screen movie, but no, it's a Netflix movie, and it premieres tonight, right?
It's on right now if you want to go watch it. It's Adam Sandler,
see
Jennifer
you, Bill.
Aniston.
Bye,
Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston reunited. They're going on a murder mystery, Agatha Christie kind of inspired cruise in Europe. Adam Sandler actually has an ongoing deal with Netflix, so most of his, if not all of his films have been going there lately. And it's, not great, according to our reviewer.
Yeah.
But I don't think you really expect anything else from Adam Sandler movie at this point. So if you just want to chill out and watch something dumb with Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston, that is there right now.
I will watch that.
So
I really will.
Who exactly decides when there's a property, a script, if it's going to be fed to a Netflix-type outlet or to theaters? I mean, he's got a deal, so they contract him to do two or three or four movies. But if there's just a movie being made, who goes, this will work better as a Netflix movie or as a feature film in theaters?
You know, there's no real set rules at this point, and this is something that's being figured out right now because Netflix, Hulu, Prime Video, etc., all buying original movies at places like Sundance is a relatively new thing. But if you look at the Sundance Film Festival, which has typically been the space for people to buy indie films, the past year, they were the major buyers. That's where the money was going. And then it's really up to the producers, if they've already made the film, to make a decision. Okay, do I want to take a risk and go for theatrical distribution? Or do I want to say, nope, I'm going to give it to Netflix. They're going to give me a ton of money, and then I'm good to go. And ultimately, that comes a lot down to the filmmaker. You know, do they feel like, no, this is a movie that needs to be shown in theaters and be seen on the big screen? Or are they going to be okay with it debuting on Netflix? And, you know, just to kind of finish this up and tie this together, Netflix in particular, and Prime Video has been doing this for a while, are trying to help that out. They've reversed their decision in a certain way to only put things out on their streaming service first. And so a lot of upcoming movies from Prime filmmakers, one would say, like the Coen brothers or Spike Lee or Martin Scorsese, have gotten a two-week theatrical release before it debuts on the service, which allows them to be nominated for awards like Oscars.
Yeah. It used to be the Academy Awards would insist the movie had to be shown first in a theater. Now they've lightened up a little bit on that, huh?
Yeah, it's an ongoing discussion, honestly, at this point, and it's something that people are fighting about a lot, but streaming is so relatively new and it's changing so rapidly that, again, it's really hard to come up with any hard and fast rules on anything.
I have recently jumped into the Big Little Lies bandwagon. I watched it because I had some free time. I absolutely got sucked in. I binge-watched everything. I love it. That will be back, won't it?
It's back. The first episode premiered Sunday on HBO.
That's right. I'm caught up. I love that.
But there is going to be a new episode every Sunday. It's 7 weeks long, so it's still a very limited series. But it's from my reviewers who have seen advanced episodes. That's great. You know, it's fantastic performances. It's gorgeous cinematography. Meryl Streep is an awesome, of course, addition to the cast.
She's amazing. It's gonna be so much fun. And something that I always confuse it with, there's a show, Life in Pieces, that, Bill, you used to watch.
I watched it last night. It's really funny.
The listener wants to know if that's been canceled.
I think it has actually been. Yeah, I believe so.
Because the cast they sent out tweets. They announced it during the upfronts. Were those 3 weeks ago, Alex? Remind me, 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Oh, gosh. So I don't know. I think it was about a month ago at this point.
It didn't make the schedule, so several cast members sent out tweets, you know, thanking the audience for 4 years and how much they'll all miss it. It's very sad because it was really a very funny, innovative show. So, yeah.
It even didn't do that badly. You know, the ratings were pretty much okay for the show by broadcast standards, but CBS is the number one network, and they're always looking for something that's in that 10 to 20 million range instead of the 5 to 10 million range.
Too bad. HBO has a show, interesting-looking show, starting on Sunday night called Euphoria. What can you tell us about Euphoria?
Sure. So this is their big play for the teen market. To be honest, we were joking about this morning. We don't know how many teens are going to say, hey, did you watch HBO last night? But it stars Zendaya. It's very honest about the teen experience. There's a lot of drug use in it. There's a lot of sex in it. There's a lot of nudity in it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this one, but one of our writers, Megan O'Keefe, likened it to Skins, the UK show that ran for many years, which was also similarly very honest about teens and also occasionally surreal in the way that it portrayed things. So if you're looking for something weird, something interesting, Euphoria, 9 p.m. on HBO on Sunday.
Somebody in 847 says simply, what is the deal with Homeland? That one's done too, isn't it, Homeland?
Yeah, I believe that's done at this point.
Yellowstone, I'm not familiar with Yellowstone. Is Yellowstone on or coming on, or what is Yellowstone?
Yellowstone just debuted for a second season. This is a semi-Western homestead show starring Kevin Costner. It's one of those shows. It's on the Paramount Network, which nobody really knows how to watch.
Yeah.
But it does really well. We've been actually surprised about the response to the show because it's not something really talked about in critical circles, but people who watch it love it. It's a drama set on a homestead. If you like Kevin Costner, you're probably going to like the show.
I thought Kimmy Schmidt was done. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, but apparently not, which is great news because that was hysterically funny. What's coming up with Kimmy Schmidt?
Yeah, there's going to be, I'd say, one more, but I guess at least one more, because we also thought it was done after the four seasons. Next year, they're going to have an interactive Kimmy Schmidt movie. It probably won't be as dark as this, but if you played with Black Mirror Bandersnatch, the interactive episode they did a couple of months back on Netflix, it's going to be the same sort of thing, using the same sort of technology. Daniel Radcliffe is going to be co-starring in the movie in a mysterious role called Frederick. But the way that they teased it is, we think the plot is, can you get Kimmy to her wedding on time over the course of the episode? And along the way, there's dancing teddy bears and robot apocalypses and all the crazy things that Kimmy does. It's not exactly a fifth season to the show. It's certainly not what anybody expected when they said maybe we'll do a movie at some point, but it should be a lot of fun for fans.
Kimmy Schmidt, like 30 Rock, was one of those shows that if you sometimes needed to watch it two or three times to get all the jokes. There were so many layers of jokes that you couldn't catch them all on one viewing.
Yeah, and this one being interactive, again, if you're familiar with Bandersnatch, that was something that I believe there was like a 6 to 8 hour play length if you wanted to watch anything, everything.
It was really cool.
It's probably going to be the same thing. Wow. So you're going to have to watch, you're going to have to spend several days watching at this point.
I think Big Brother debuts this weekend. I could be wrong. It's coming up soon, though, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, Big Brother is coming up Tuesday, June 25th at 8 p.m.
All right,
so
I'm ready for it.
Pretty exciting.
Alex, great to talk to you. We really appreciate it. We'll talk to you a week from now.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thank you so much. It's Alexander Zalbin, the managing editor at Decider.com. It's a great website, Decider.com. We'll take a break, and then we'll talk to a mountain climber, somebody who's been up top on Mount Everest, and find out what that was like. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
First there is a mountain, then there is no mountain, then there is. First there is a mountain, then there is.
We're going to talk about a mountain climber from Naperville, Illinois. He did something that, Bill, you and I will never, ever do. Mm-mm. He has just trekked up Mount Everest. Welcome, Rick Poole. Rick, thank you so much for coming up here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You just did it in May.
May 23rd.
Your first time climbing Mount Everest, and as you've told Wendy and myself, your only time climbing Mount Everest. You're not going back.
Well, you're the one who said, oh, are you going to do it again?
Well, you tell us. Why one and out?
There's a 0% chance I'm going to do that again. So, partially because I successfully summited.
Yeah.
So, unless someone's going to pay me a whole heap of money, why would I go back and do it again?
Yeah, you've accomplished it.
But two, I mean, I was gone for 66 days. And that is a lengthy journey, regardless of what you're doing. And climbing Everest was obviously something I did voluntarily, but not every one of those 66 days is comfortable. I mean, it's a really difficult thing to do.
Right.
And for those reasons.
Wait, and I can't even like wrap my head around this. So you decide, okay, you've been climbing other mountains before, and you're like, yep. I need to conquer Mount Everest.
Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate challenge for a mountain climber.
I don't know. It was for me. I mean, there are other mountains that are more dangerous.
Yeah.
So there's a K2, which the death rate is 25%, and Annapurna, where it's 33%.
It's 2% on Mount Everest?
It's 2%. 2.4 was the last number that I saw.
Yeah.
Just hearing the word death rate would make me not want to do it.
Well, and you're not alone. This is not everybody's calling.
Right.
This is pretty unique. I didn't ask for it either, by the way.
Yeah.
I would much rather have God gave me a greater interest in checkers, chess, playing the piano, but I got stuck with mountain climbing, and it wasn't something that happened in a flash. There was no bolt of lightning that said, you have to go do this. I was just messing around in Colorado with my buddies.
Yeah.
And we were climbing out there for a couple of years, and I realized just how much I love being in the mountains. And as I tend to do, I have this itch I can't quite seem to scratch, where no matter what I'm doing, I ask myself, like, how big can I make this?
Yeah.
Like, what's the next thing I could do? And it finally occurred to me when I really mapped it out that for me, the biggest I could make it, which is the highest point on the planet, was, let's go summit Everest. And so I mapped it out. It was an 8-step process from where I was.
8-step process.
Yeah, some in Colorado, and then there was definitely some hoops to jump through to be trained, you know, technically, to how do I climb a big mountain. And I said, well, that's a long list of stuff right there. I'll just do the first one. If I don't like it, then I'm going to stop.
How much bigger is Mount Everest than the next highest mountain you had climbed?
So the highest I'd been before Everest was I climbed Aconcagua in early 2017. That's the highest peak in South America. Say that 10 times real fast.
I just was wondering if I had to hit the dump button on that. I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, I just swore in a foreign language. No, it's Aconcagua. That was 22,800 feet.
All right. And so
is
Everest?
That two-thirds of the size of Mount Everest?
Everest at the top is 29,029 feet.
Yeah.
So a difference of about 7,000 feet.
Significantly taller.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a whole different project.
And you had said this off the air, but you have to train for this. This isn't just something like, oh, I climbed a mountain, so now I'm going to conquer Everest.
No, not at all. And in fact, you know, everybody heard all of the news stories that happened this year, which is, you know, probably part of the reason that got me into this beautiful room that you have here. So I had to not only mess around in Colorado. Step one in that 8-step plan was I went to an 8-day mountain climbing course with Alpine Ascents International out in, that's in Washington State. And that was a rigorous training. I mean, you could climb that mountain in 2 days. So we were there for 8, you know, learning how to rope, learning how to self-arrest, learning how to pace yourself, learning how to set up camp on a glacier and all sorts of technical aspects of climbing a big mountain. Yeah, and then from there I went on and climbed Aconcagua, which was a month-long journey, and which was really, really cool. It was my first experience, you know, on a month-long expedition. And then climbed a couple of volcanoes in Mexico, which I cannot pronounce the name of because they have like 21 letters and 6 X's.
Oh, right. That's fine.
But they're the 3rd and 5th highest peak in North America.
Yeah.
Itza and Orizaba is the shortened name. And then last summer, I did Denali, which is the highest peak in North America.
Are there any points during these climbs where you say to yourself, I have bitten off more than I can chew? Yeah? What happened there?
Well, so I had a rule before I went, and I was willing to accept 1% of risk. So I knew, no matter what, that there was going to be risk on Everest.
Yeah.
And I was willing to accept a 1% chance that I might not come home in order to get to the top of the world. But no more.
You really thought in your head for a minute, there is a very slight chance, but I may not come home. Did you really, truly believe that?
Yeah, you have to. If you don't believe that going to Everest, you're fooling yourself.
Yeah.
That's just a silly
thing. Then why would
you
go?
I was willing to accept 1% to do it.
Wow.
Not more than 1%.
You trust yourself very much.
It's not just me, and I did, but I went with an amazing group. I mean, we had some of the best guides in the world, and we had 1-to-1 Sherpa ratio on summit day. Like, so many of the stories that we read about here in the States, like, I can tell you firsthand how to minimize some of them. However, regardless of how prepared you are or how prepared your team is, there are things outside of your control. Right? So each time we went through the Khumbu Icefall, for example, which I kind of enjoyed, and the Khumbu Icefall is bananas. Picture 1,000 blocks of ice the size of your average house, sprinkled about for 2 miles up the mountain. And you're going under and over and through, and these are the pictures of the ladders you see that scare everybody to death.
Yeah.
And, you know, each time I went through that, I never once felt like I was in danger. There were some moments that were scary. You know, some of those ladders, I'm like, I don't really want to do that.
Right.
But you do it.
Right.
But I was kidding myself. At any point, one of these big blocks of ice could fall off the side of the mountain, and if it's your day, it's your day. And that's what happened in 2014. Killed 14 Sherpa all in one swoop. So, but to answer your question, I had a promise with myself that if at any point in this venture I felt like my life was in danger, I would turn around and come home, because it's not worth not seeing my girls again or my family.
Right.
And I broke that rule. And when I broke it, there was nowhere else for me to go. I was on my way down. And I was on my way down. It started snowing really hard. I was still at 29,000 feet when it happened. And right after the summit of Everest, which is, by the way, a pretty cool spot to hang out.
How long did you get to stay up at the top? I know you did a selfie and you need pictures.
Yeah, you got to do that because you're not going back up there to, you know, grab something. Yeah, I left my glasses behind. I'm not going to get them. I was up there for about 10 minutes. But just by myself, there were other people around, but nobody else was on the summit at the time. Everyone, I guess, had already taken their picture. And so I got to sit on top of the world for about 10 minutes.
Oh, man.
But you can't even feel the accomplishment because you still have the trek down. So you can't. It's no victory lap once you're up there.
It's not as big a victory lap as I would have thought, just for that reason. However, it still felt pretty good.
It's still pretty good to be up there. Sure,
yeah,
of course.
I mean, because I felt pretty good at the time.
Right.
My Sherpa was right there with me.
Right.
You know, we were doing some high-fiving. And I'd made myself a list of things to do on the summit just in case I was a little delirious when I got
there.
Oh, yeah.
And altitude sickness, they talk about that. That's a possibility.
It is. And we saw a lot of that. So I just didn't want to forget. And the very first thing, so I broke out the Ziploc bag of stuff. And I had a list on it. The very first thing on the list in big print was, enjoy this for yourself. And so I get to sit there and, like, that's good advice.
I'm just going to take it all in.
I'm just going to take it all in for a few minutes.
I'm sorry, I just have one more question. So you said you made it up there and you didn't enjoy it probably as much as you should have because you still had to think about coming down. Is going up the same amount of danger and difficulty as coming down?
No. Coming down is way harder.
Isn't it really?
So, yeah, it is. And for a number of reasons I fully understand, even before I went to Everest, is... The whole time you're on any one of these big peaks, it doesn't even have to be a big peak. It could be a small peak. It doesn't matter. The whole time you're going up, you're thinking, I can't wait to see what it's like up there.
Yeah.
And so there's a huge emotional drain when you go and you get that done and say, yeah. And then they're like, yeah, we have to go back down. I'm like, there's no elevator. There's no escalator. Yeah. And so you're emotionally deflated. And you don't realize sometimes just how much energy you consumed getting up there. And so, for example, this year, 90% of the deaths were on the way down.
God, that breaks my heart.
Yeah.
Here's a question that I already know the answer to. If you had the option, you get to the top, you get to the summit, and there is an elevator down, you can either take the elevator or you could climb down. Which would you choose?
Elevator.
Yeah.
But then it wouldn't count. You have to climb back down or they don't count your summit.
Ah, crazy rules. Rick Poole is here. He has been to the top of Mount Everest and back. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right. We are just being amazed by Rick Poole, a mountain climber. You're from Naperville. There are no mountains that high in Naperville, are there?
No.
Mount Prospect is close. Have you ever thought about climbing Mount Prospect?
That would be great, actually, to add to the list. Yes, Denali, Aconcagua, Everest, yes. Mount Prospect.
Very impressive.
Now, Rick is here because he just climbed Mount Everest on May 23rd of this year. Someone said, I interrupted you. So will you finish telling your story about you breaking the rule where if you thought you were in any danger, you would turn around? It was on your way down, though, right?
Yeah, it was on the way down, which is usually where these things happen. And, you know, I mentioned I was willing to accept 1%. And, you know, what are the chances that happens?
Mm-hmm.
1%.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran smack into it. So we got up to the summit late because of all the crowds that we all, you know, read and heard about. And so instead of getting up there at 8 o'clock in the morning when it's still really beautiful and blue skies, we got up there 10:45. And so after my 10 minutes, my Sherpa gave me the high sign, like, we got to go because it started snowing. And by the time I got to the top of the Hillary Step, it was snowing very hard. And the goggles I have, they open just a crack, just so they don't fog up. And in the time I walked from the summit to the top of the Hillary Step, so much snow had gotten in there that I couldn't see anymore. And when you're standing at the top of the Hillary Step, it's about 40 feet straight down. I mean, it's a really vertical section. And I couldn't see. My Sherpa had already kind of gone off the first step. So he was close by, but I couldn't see him. And there was a man had fallen down the Hillary Step the day before, and his body is at the base of the Hillary Step. And we walked by it on the way up.
They just leave bodies there, like we've read.
Yes, they're going to leave Mr. Cash where he is. Mm. That's who that is. Don Cash was the first American climber, and he's at almost 29,000 feet. So they're not going to be bringing his body down. It's too high. And so, anyway, for all of these different reasons, I froze. I panicked. I hyperventilated. I couldn't breathe. And it was a terrifying moment. And right in the middle of all that, the people behind me, because there's still folks coming down, were very vocal about the fact that I can't stop there. And they're right. I can't stop there. Because we're all in a storm, and we all have to get down the mountain. I can't afford my panic attack. And so, it was absolutely terrifying. And I took the step and hoped for the best.
Oh, my God.
Full well, if I didn't hit the right place, that I was probably staying there.
So what kind of rebound time do you have when something, I mean, that's as life and death can be. Do you get over that in minutes, weeks, months, years? How do you?
I'm not over it as I sit here and talk to you.
No, probably not.
But at the time, I had no choice. I mean, so I staggered down, you know, moving like a baby deer. Thankfully, Ang Nuru, nicknamed Robbie, my Sherpa, was right there. And he kind of grabbed my arm and looked at me like, you know, you all right, dude?
Yeah.
He moved my clip for me, and, you know, we went down the mountain together, and it never stopped snowing the whole way, and I never got to see any better. And, you know, if he wasn't there,
right,
that would have been, at a minimum, a much longer day. And at a maximum, I might not have made it back to Camp 4 without him.
God. Are you allowed to make the climb without a guide or a Sherpa? Or
sure.
Is that you are allowed to.
You could pay the $11,000 climbing fee and do it in a pair of shorts and flip-flops if you want.
Yeah.
Okay, so $11,000 is what you need to pay to them to climb Mount Everest, but then your transportation and training is all additional, correct?
Yeah, so $11,000 is what the Nepal government's going to demand. So that was part of the fee I paid. So I paid a $70,000 fee to go do this. And that's without the flights, and that's without the hotels, and so it ends up being more than that.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, there are groups that do it for half that. And this
you don't
is
want a cut-rate group on
this. This is not
on
one of the things that you want to cut. That's exactly right. Like, you don't shop for discount LASIK, I don't think, right?
Right.
I mean, there's some things that just, I don't care. I don't want the discount. But people do it, and they cause, there's some people who shouldn't have been there.
So we saw all those lines of people waiting to go up the mountain. It almost looks like a tourist attraction, like you're waiting in line for a ride at Disney. But you're climbing as you're in that line of people?
Yeah, so, you know, the picture that became famous was from May 22nd. It was the day before I went. Our day looked not as crowded, but still there was a lot of people. And what ends up happening is there's one rope. So once you get above the south summit, which is at 28,000 feet, that last journey is not only technical, is there's one rope, and people are going up and coming down. And so that ridge line is, if you step a couple feet to the right, you're dropping 12,000 feet into Tibet. If you step a couple feet to your left, you're dropping 8,000 feet down back into Nepal. So it's a pretty intimidating area to be, period. But then you throw two-way traffic and climbers who are slowing down big time. Yeah, there are moments that are a little uncomfortable up there.
Because you could essentially be responsible for not only your own death, but a wrong move could cost somebody else their life as well, right?
Yeah, it could.
Yeah.
Like a domino thing, if you fall or something, could you...
Yeah, we're not roped together, so if you fall, you're probably falling on your own.
Yeah.
But what ends up happening is, at the top of Everest, is it such a narrow path, is when somebody is really struggling, everyone behind them is going slower.
Mm-hmm.
And it won't surprise you to know that being above 26,000 feet, physiologically, even with oxygen on, is really difficult. And so instead of being above 26,000 feet for 10 to 12 hours, I was above 26,000 feet for 17 hours.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, it was hard.
Right.
And I can't imagine, you know, anyone who wasn't in that, you know, kind of shape, because I trained pretty hard for it.
Yeah.
You know, slows down, and once you slow down up there, if you feel like sitting down taking a nap, that's
not going to work.
No, that's not going to work.
And you go up the same way you come down. It's not like you go up one side of Mount Everest and then come down the other side. It's like, as you mentioned, two-way traffic.
It's two-way traffic.
Did you have to step over dead bodies? Did you see them? Was that for real right there? That's what we've read also.
Yeah, so this was the part of the journey that wasn't in the brochure. That I could not possibly have anticipated this part of it.
Yeah.
Like the storm on the way down, there was a chance, and that happened. But, yeah, from going up to Camp 4.
Wait, Rick, I hate to sound, this will sound like a stereotypical cliffhanging ending, but we're out of regular time on the show.
Huh.
Are you okay to stick around? We'll do the bonus hour. If you can stick, we would love to hear more. Are you good with that for a little bit?
I'm good with that. Yeah, I'm okay.
All right.
That is the best tease you have ever done in all the years I've worked with
you.
As
unintentional as can be, we're just out of time, and I don't want to miss any of the stories.
Yeah.
So we'll bring this over to the stream for the bonus hour. Rick will join us, and we'll tell more about his climbing of Mount Everest.